Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Trump's threat to shut down the government in order to get his border wall and compare that act of stupidity to the monumental catastrophe which failing to raise the debt ceiling would be, with the United States defaulting on its debt and ruining its full faith and credit as the world's best bet and the place to invest your money. Jared Bernstein, a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and the former chief economist and economic advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and a member of President Obama's economic team, joins us to explain the vastly different degrees of a self-inflicted wound a default would be compared to a government shutdown. We will assess the hope that there are some adults in the room who could constrain a reckless and ignorant president in league with the nativist ideologues of the Tea Party House Freedom Caucus, whose economic illiteracy is only surpassed by their xenophobic zeal to wall off America from the Latino and Muslim hordes. Then we will speak with Henry Giroux, a world-renowned educator, author, and public intellectual who currently holds the McMaster University Professor for Scholarship in the Public Interest, about his latest book, The Public in Peril, Trump and the Menace of American Authoritarianism. We will discuss Trump's alarming response to the recent disgrace of neo-Nazis descending on Thomas Jefferson's hometown and Jefferson's warning that, quote, an ignorant people cannot remain a free people in the context of a failing education system and growing civic ignorance compounded by social media that has given rise to our Kardashian culture. Then finally, we'll examine the Secretary of the Interior's plan to review 27 national monuments ordered by President Trump that threatens to open up federal land protected under the Antiquities Act to mining, logging, drilling, and grazing. Robert Kider, the founding director of the Wallace Stegner Center for Land Resources and the Environment at the University of Utah and the author of To Conserve Unimpaired, The Evolution of the National Park Idea, joins us to discuss the likelihood that a blizzard of lawsuits will ensue if Trump is to be the first ever president to abolish a national monument designated by a predecessor. And joining us now is Jared Bernstein, a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He was the chief economist and economic advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and a member of President Obama's economic team. And prior to joining the Obama administration, he was a senior economist and the director of the Living Standard Program at the Economic Policy Institute. And before that was deputy chief economist at the United States Department of Labor. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jared Bernstein.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
And I think it'd be useful for the public to get a kind of primer on what's at stake here when just a couple of days ago at a campaign-style rally in Arizona, President Trump told the crowd, believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall. And of course, he's referring to the border wall that 6 in 10 people in the United States oppose, with 85% of Americans saying that Mexico is not going to pay for that wall, as Trump promised. Ultimately, we would be picking up the tab. So let's talk about the difference between shutting down the government and defaulting, which is really what we should be talking about.
Right. Well, the idea of a government shutdown is a very very bad idea, in no small part because the economy's doing pretty well. Still got room to run, no question. But the idea of any kind of own goal, as they say in soccer, that is doing something foolish for a particularly bad reason in this case, is just pointless. When we've had these government shutdowns in the past, they've ended up being temporary, but also wasteful and somewhat costly. So, for example, the national park shut down, and that means there's less economic activity. People postpone or cancel trips therein. An interesting wrinkle that people may not know about is when the government shuts down, a bunch of employees go home, but eventually they end up getting paid anyway for work that they didn't do. So it's just a really dumb way to waste a few billion dollars, depending on how long the shutdown goes on for.
So your metaphor you use, though, it would seem to me that as opposed to an own goal in SOFCA, if we were to default on our debt, then that would be akin not so much to shooting yourself in the foot, but shooting yourself in the head.
Right, right. Numerous times. The idea that the U.S. would default on its sovereign debt, meaning that the debt held by the public, I'm talking about all the treasury bonds that are out there, when payments come due on those, as well as all kinds of other obligations that the government has. If the government were to not meet those obligations because of this whole debt ceiling problem, that would be a default. Now, defaults do happen, but not in advanced economy governments, and especially governments that can print their own currency. So this really makes absolutely no sense at all. What would happen to the economy? I mean, we don't know, because thankfully we've never done this before, and hopefully there'll be enough grown-ups in the room to take over this time so we won't do it again. So we won't do it this time. But of course, interest rates would shoot up dramatically. That is, the amount of money that lenders want to get from you when they lend you money, that's very much a function of credit risk or the likelihood that you would default. Obviously, if we would default, credit risk would go through the roof, interest rates would shoot up. Now, we have a stock of public debt in this country that comes to about $15 trillion. So let's say the interest rate went up one measly point. Now, that's way optimistic. It would probably go up many multiples of that. But let's just say the interest rate went up one point. Well, on a stock of $15 trillion of debt, that's $150 billion. And that's $150 billion more dollars of debt service. It's like 0.75% of GDP, just because Congress can't get its act together and the president is playing ridiculous risky games.
And again, I'm speaking with Jared Bernstein, the senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He was the chief economist and economic advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and a member of President Obama's economic team. So, but this is more than a game, it would seem. If you look at the latest tweet that came out on Thursday morning from President Trump, and that is the means by which he transacts policy by tweeting about it. He said, I requested that Mitch M, meaning the majority leader of the Senate, and Paul R, meaning the Speaker of the House, tie the debt ceiling legislation to the popular VA bill, which just passed, for easy approval. They didn't do it. So now we have a big deal with Dems holding them up as usual on debt ceiling approval. Could have been so easy, now a mess. So what do you take from that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would urge you and your listeners not to take anything Donald Trump says or tweets as verbatim or even that seriously in many cases. So he may say something in the morning and completely reverse himself in the evening. So he's always negotiating, he's always posturing, he's often lying. So you just can never know what to make out of these things. And we've been here before, and there is a way out. There are enough kind of grown-ups at the table, members of Congress who consider default just as absolutely crazy as I do, and they will raise the debt ceiling at the last minute, as they've done in the past, as is the way we hope this ends. Now, by no means am I saying that the probability of defaulting is zero. It's non-zero, but based on history, it's pretty low. Let me make another point, though, about this. This is really important. The objection to raising the debt ceiling comes from obstructionists, people who don't understand economics, politicians who want to make a lot of noise, maybe get themselves in the newspaper, maybe look good to their constituents who also don't really understand the economic dynamics of what's going on here. So they make a big deal about how raising the debt ceiling is inconsistent with fiscal responsibility. That is completely misguided in the following sense. The reason we need to raise the debt ceiling is to pay for all of the spending that Congress has already authorized. This is not for new spending. This is for spending that these members of Congress, who are currently, some of them, arguing that we shouldn't raise the debt ceiling or we should have a default in order rather than give up a clean debt ceiling bill. They are perfectly akin to someone sitting at a restaurant who just finished their meal and they're wiping their greasy face with their napkins and saying, I'm not going to pay that bill. It's perfectly analogous because, again, this is spending that they've already signed off on. So it's not fiscally responsible. It's fiscally reckless.
Well, the president, I think, is in that category of not knowing what is at stake here. But my understanding is that if the United States defaults, in terms of the shooting yourself in the head analogy, this would be like shooting yourself in the head with a nuclear weapon. Because wouldn't this affect one of the greatest advantages the U.S. has, with the dollar being the global reserve currency?
Yeah, I mean, I think the, it's again, as I said earlier, it's really hard to say what would happen because we've not even, it's not that we haven't defaulted, it's that we've always been considered the safest haven. Our government debt has and is to this day, as I speak to you, is considered by far the safest asset in the world. Putting Trump in the last 6 months aside, that's because we have a stable democracy, liquid capital markets, the rule of law, a court system, a Federal Reserve that oversees a banking system. And it doesn't mean that everybody does their job perfectly and that we never have hiccups or much worse. Of course, we do. But the reputation of U.S. sovereign debt is the highest in the world. And to lose that would be cataclysmic. I cited the cost in terms of debt service because interest rates would go through the roof. But each year, the government contracts something like $500, $600 billion in outside contracts, worth of contracts. So would we not pay the members of the military? Would we not pay the people who provide their food and lodging? Would we not pay the many employees of the government sector? Would we not send out Social Security checks? Would we stop providing Medicare? I mean, these are the kinds of existential questions that would be invoked by this kind of thing.
Well, just in closing, Jared Bernstein, my understanding is that already Wall Street's unsettled by this even talk of a government shutdown and a default. So I don't think you can dismiss this because we've never had a president like Donald Trump. We've never had, 6 or 7 months of chaos like this, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. And the announcement that he made about threatening to shut down the government to get his border wall came in a speech that many people consider was completely unhinged.
Well, before we go on, let me distinguish between a government shutdown and a default on our debt, as we have throughout our conversation. Now, mm-hmm. They're not the same thing, right. And the latter is many multitudes worse than the former. Neither are good, neither are necessary, neither are needed. I can definitely see Trump trying to shut down the government. I'm not sure he'd go as far as defaulting, but I'm not sure he wouldn't.
Well, that's not entirely comforting, is it?
No, it isn't.
All righty. Well, thank you for joining us, and let's try and stay in touch here as the wrecking
much.
Crew continues. And again, I've been speaking with Jared Bernstein, a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He was the chief economist and economic advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and a member of President Obama's economic team. And prior to joining the Obama administration, he was a senior economist and the director of the Living Standards Program at the Economic Policy Institute. And before that was deputy chief economist at the United States Department of Labor. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back speaking with a world-renowned educator, author, and public intellectual, Henry Giroux.